Right, it's David Patient here, who was born in 1947 in Clapham, in London, but didn't spend long there. Spent a little time in Egypt with my father. He had a job there.
That sounds very exotic, going to
Yes,
Egypt.
That's right. We did all the pyramids and everything else, but I don't remember it, but my sister did. Tutankhamun and the lot, but it's there somewhere in the brain. But we... I think the revolution started. It was Nasser was King Farouk was overthrown, so we had to go remove ourselves, and we, as a real come down, we ended up in Canvey Island with my grandmother, where we spent most of our childhood messing about in the ditches and swimming.
So you were still quite young when you went to Canvey.
Oh yeah, yes, about 4 or 5 years old. Yes, so. That was a wonderful upbringing, because there was, after the war, before the war, people bought plots to live in, but a lot of them didn't actually survive in the East End. So as a kid, you had all this open ground and ditches to fall in and swimming, which very good for swimming. So I think at school at 15, I saw an advert to sail on a barge, a charter barge called the Memory, which was the first charter barge in Malden. And a friend and I think my mum and dad must have paid for it and organised it, but we went for a wonderful weekend. There I got hooked and came back winter time to help. We became what was called part of the permanent staff.
So we
were in the hold.
You were still at school? This was in the school?
Yes,
holidays.
That's right, yes, just which was, gives you plenty of time. And so I used to go down weekends and at Salcott Creek Mill Beach, and the barge was laid up. We spent many a happy hour painting and messing about. So we used to sail with them for years. Subsequently, my academic life wasn't good at school, but I was a good artist, so I was encouraged to... Well, all I could do is go to art college, really. There was nothing else for me. So we went to Southwest Essex College and School of Art, Walthamstow, which we did a pre-diploma, and then I went to... And then it became a higher degree. It became degree status, and so we went to Ravensbourne for 3 years. And then, as art students, we never wanted to do any work, so we were looking to go to other colleges and try and keep away. I remember getting a letter from the Essex County Council saying, "Thank you very much, Mr. Patient. Your grant is now finishing, and we wish you well in your working career," or something. Very sort of quite amusing letter to say I wasn't going to get any more grant.
So, did you specialise at all in any form of art?
Yes, painting and printmaking. I wasn't a very good painter, but I was quite a good printmaking, and I did. I nearly went to one of the printmaking colleges, but I had a row with somebody, and I got something. Anyway, we all ended up at Goldsmiths doing an art teacher's certificate. Don't know why, because we had no intention of teaching. Just to stave off the inevitable. And my mate said, "Oh, you've been in the common room, David?" I said, "No, why?" They want an art teacher at Malden Grammar School. And I said, "Oh, yeah, thank you, But I was barging at the time and messing about down there, and I was rebuilding my own boat. So I very reluctantly went down, and the head of department, we got on famously, but the headmaster couldn't stand me, see. So I was selected by the head of department, Stuart Gibson, and I went to the headmaster to see what was happening, and he said, "I'm very reluctant to giving you the job, and if you don't sign now, you must sign now." And he said, "I completely disagree with Mr. Thamir. I don't think you're suitable," things like that. I thought, this is nice. So I got Borshi and signed to be a part. No, I couldn't care less. So I went back. I remember going back into the staff room, and all these people, lots of other interviewees. And they looked at me and I looked so really pissed off, you know. And one of the girls burst out into tears because I said, look, you know, you can have it if you want, but I can't give it to you. And I remember, because I'd known all the waterfront and the shipwrights at Cook's, and I walked down the hill, you know, didn't know where the school was, down St Mary's Lane into Cook's Yard, and they were working, and they said, you don't look too happy. I said, I've just got a job. And they burst out laughing. See? So I did that. It was a grammar school for a year and a plume school for comprehensive, but it wasn't a comprehensive, it just... So I got on with the kids, and other than the institution, you know.
So this was 1960?
This is about 1970-something, early 70s, yeah. Right. I think something like that. And as I'd been rebuilding my own boat at Danworth and Fees's, old yard. No, it was Dixon Cooley's, beg your pardon, down further, which is now Downs Road Boatyard.
All right.
Yeah. And I'd known everybody about, because I'd been barging since I was 15. So I got a job as a sort of, as a trainee, because I'd been had some experience with tools, with Barry Pierce, who ran the barge at Walter Cook & Sons at that time. And I learnt my trade from Baden Debman and Bill Claydon, who's still alive.
You were teaching still at this time?
No. When I left, I did my 3 years, and I remember bumping into teachers saying, because I left and nobody leaves teaching. And they said, how are you getting on? As if I couldn't survive that. Because, you know, people that teach often go to school, go to college and teach. And they can't actually do the job that they're teaching, if you know what I mean. If they were a mathematician, they've got, you know. So they teach. But I thought I'd change my career. And they used to look at me sympathetically thinking, you're outside, you know. How are you doing? Are you surviving? Yeah, I'm fine, you know. So I spent my time, a long time at Cook's.
Right, so Cook's employed you?
They did indeed. Yes, yeah, so on a self-employed basis. Yeah. And right. I learnt my trade there with the others. And what was happening at that time was the charter business was taking off, and Barry was buying a lot of motor barges that had finished in trade, and they were starting to rig them out. So most of the barges on the quay now we probably worked on.
Right.
And, you know, when they came along and ready for rigging out.
So you say rigging out. So what did that involve?
Well, you've got a barge that's just got a wheelhouse that was a sailing barge. So you take the wheelhouse off and put all the necessary sailing gear back on her, making the spars and sails, putting the gear together, and repairs, of course, you know, planking. Needs a lot of structural work.
And a long job.
Yes, well, you know, it was winter and summer work, very nice. And I was doing my own boat at the same time.
So you were working with Barry Pierce?
Well, Barry ran the yard. Yeah. Didn't physically do anything at that time. He does help out and things, but it was his job to run the yard, find the work, order the timber and pay our wages.
Who else was working there?
When I was there for a time, Jamie, when I first went, there's my mate Jamie Dodds, who is now a eminent artiste. He was an apprentice at Cook's, but he was sent away to Falmouth. And when I joined there, he was away as part of his training. And when he was brought back, he was put with me as a young lad. So we had a friendship. And then after that, just going ahead, he worked for me when I had my own yard. And we had to decide whether he was going to be an artist, because he liked art as well. And then he went to art college. And we all decided. And then he came back and helped me shipwriting in his holidays time. But we had to decide whether he wanted to be a shipwright or an artist. And now he's a very successful artist who works from Wivenhoe. So
you were a number of years at Cook's Yard.
Yeah.
And then you started your own.
Yes, it was Dave Barry sold it to, I can't remember the people now, but I didn't get on with the new owners particularly. Oh, they didn't want me, so I faded away and I went out to Dan Wemfees's and took over the shed that John Howard's old blacksmith shed, which is down down the Free Hard, right next to Dan Wemfees's.
Right.
The shed is still there.
Mm. So just to be quite clear on its location, it was down, can you explain a bit more?
Well, you know Church Street, North Street goes into what they call Dagger Lane.
Yes.
Right, down the bottom of Dagger Lane, before you turn, there's a shed that gets flooded. You've got the boatyard, which was John Howard's shipyard, now Devon and Fees's, now whatever they call themselves, and that shed was the blacksmith shed. And I worked in there, building barge boats and messing about. And I worked for Dan Wemfees's when they were got a contract to start with the Curtin Sailing Trust, Reverend Bill Broad started a sailing trust for young people to sail on. And they bought the Queen Galadriel, which is a Baltic trader. We worked on that.
Say that was the Curtin?
The Curtin Trust, CIR. It's come from Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Yeah.
He was in a Lord of the Rings aficionado, so everything was called, you know, things after the Tolkien's work. So we rigged her house, and when I moved from that shed, I moved down. Where do I go next? I probably go to Downs Road Boatyard for a while. And then I moved, and then it was right at where I am now near the bridge, and took over a bit of land from there. We built a yacht there, and we took over the Curtin Trust work.
So that was Fulbridge?
That's Fulbridge, yeah.
And that's where you're still?
That's where I was until 2 years ago, I resigned. Oh, not resigned, until I retired, rather.
Right, right.
Yeah, I didn't own the yard. They had various owners, but Nigel Cardy of Lambreach, who owned the yard.
You must have worked on almost hundreds of boats and barges those years.
Yeah, I was trying to number. Yes, there was, I don't know, 20, 30 individual vessels with cooks, and then I took some of the work I got at Fulbridge as well. And then I was shipwright advisor to the Curtin Sailing Trust, and they had the Xylonite, the barge, and a yacht called the Duet, which we looked after. And so with Reverend Bill Broad, we became very good friends. And so he constantly employed me as the shipwright's advisor for, 30 years maybe.
When you say shipwright, what does that title actually mean?
Well, there is a definition between a boat builder and a shipwright. Perhaps it's, if you're being pedantic, there is a definition. Shipwrights work on large craft and do repairs and build large craft. And boat builders build boats. And then you've got to define a boat. I think it was defined as a craft propelled by oars. It's, you know, a bit dodgy. People call that, come and have a look at my boat, and it's a great thing. But it did have a different, a boat builder in a shipyard was building boats. Yes, the question was any sort of, what we did at Cook's in the barge world, if you had to put the rails or anything that needed bending on a barge, and particularly the rails which start at the stem and go right round in a curve back to the rigging chock, which is quite, and they're about 3 inches thick and about 12 to 14 inches high. And so a piece of oak was selected, a pattern was taken from the barge, and you'd cut it out flat out of the tree, out of the plank, and it needed then to be steamed. So in Cook's you had a box, which was called a cowl, a very large box you slid the timber into that accommodated the timber, and then a boiler, which you had a a wooden fire underneath, create the steam that was then injected into the box. And the general rule of thumb is every inch of oak, you gave it an hour steaming. So, but you needed the steam very hot to make it pliable, and you couldn't just generally bend it round the barge. So what you had to do is make a pattern of the shape you needed finally on the barge by measuring, and you made that out of timber, a structure, so that it would be a platform to bend. So after the thing was hot, after 3 hours, you'd get your gloves on, as many people as you could find, cramps, everything ready, and everybody prepared. You pull the, which might weigh half a ton, out of the steaming box and quickly cramp it and bend it and stand on it and bend it over the top of the former and quickly get the cramps on. Of course, sometimes it split, so you'd start all again. But to stop the splitting, you'd choose a piece of oak where the grain was very straight along the grain, didn't come out, didn't have any cross grain, but you never tell. So sometimes you might have done it three times, so you then go back and start cutting out again, so it's a whole day wasted. But that's cramped, and then you go home or do something else, and in the morning that would be cold, and it could be lifted and then fitted to the barge, because it should retain its shape.
And that was just one piece of timber?
That's just, say, but I remember one time we were working on the barge convoy, and when we decided that it was a piece of iroko, which is an African timber that doesn't hold the steam, doesn't bend very well, but we thought we could do it on the barge itself. So we set it up on the stem and gradually bent it round on board the barge. And there was, that's right alongside the quay at Cook's, and there was a very annoying chap that used to come and chat to us. And while we were doing it, unbeknown to us, the cleat at the thing flung off and the whole thing went out straight again, hit him, and then fell in the mud. And off he went howling. He survived it, but the whole thing, you know, after being bent, the shape of the barge just didn't like it. And so it all the fastenings flew and it just went straight and just went straight into the mud after connecting with him as well. So what? Well, iroka, which is a harder timber, less dense, so the fibre is difficult to get the steam into to ply. It can be done, but it needs to be wet. So oak was a better thing. So planking had to, if you've got planking roundabout, anything with a piece of shape or twist, and if the plank is thick, 2 inches plus, then you're not going to do it by hand generally. And so steaming is a, it's a process that every shipyard had to use to get to entice timber to go where you wanted it to go.
Has it been more difficult over the years to get hold of the right timber?
Yes, I wouldn't like to do my job again, because there used to be 3 timber yards in Essex, or locally, where you could go and talk to the people and they'd have oak there or what you wanted. Where we used elm and oak and larch. We hadn't gone on to the African timbers at that stage. And now there's none, and then all of a sudden we were going to Suffolk constantly. So, yes, and as the work went off, people shipwrighting wanted to rebuild large wooden craft, come less and less. Obviously, the demand for it came less, and nobody was that interested to supply. And we always wanted the best timber, so it was a bit of a pain in the arse to be a timber supplier to shipyards. So yes, it would. And now the chap that's taken over my yard has just come back from France to buy iroka, which comes from Africa, comes from the west coast of Africa, to rebuild the Pudge.
Right.
Which is his next job.
Yes.
And so that so we're buying, it's not even the dealers in England must be getting less and less, that we've got to go to France, who buy the timber from Africa.
So that's going to be shipped across?
Well, that's the in the yard now, yeah. It would go into a lorry.
Right.
It's probably maximum of 40 foot or something.
Yeah.
But that's brought over by lorry, yes.
Yeah. What other, can you name some other barges that you work, remember working on?
Right, well,
lots probably.
Yes, Lady Jean, Lady Daphne, May, Gladys, Berwick, Silenite, Arduino, Edith May, Memory, Convoy.
And are they, most of them, still around locally?
No, a lot of have fallen by the wayside, but somehow the Gladys has been rebuilt for the sort of the 10th time. The Arduino was another one that's still going, but and yes, a few have been, but some have finished. And Sawcott Bell, for instance, lays in the, and the Memory lays in the marsh at Tollesbury, completely covered in mud, finished completely. Whereas, you know, I knew them. And others are sort of struggling to be preserved. So, yes, it's a difficult one. I think you've got more steel barges now because there is a, I suppose, they're going to be cheaper to repair. And you've got more people that can weld, that can, you know, rather than shipwrighting.
And when you owned your own yard, when it was your business, you worked on all sorts of boats?
Yeah, I went down to where at Forbridge to build a 32-foot yacht for a local client. That was nice. So we made a temporary tent and built that, started there. And then I brought the barge work there, built a, you know, some small craft and maintained the Curtain Truss vessels and barges, like the Arduino, the May, Gladys, and had the Queen Gladrill, the Baltic Trader, there winter time, and then did storage. I bought a crane, and so I could then pull out boats, and that would help financially, not just for work, just for hard standing winter time.
Would you like to say a little bit more about the Curtain Trust? Obviously, you've done a lot of work for them.
Well, Bill vessels. Broad, who was the vicar of Mayland, he is the most, I think a lot of vicars are, you know, are not always very Christian, and he is the most Christian person I can meet. And he had his father, I think, were into farming. They're obviously wealthy, and he had his money before the father died, and he put it all into starting the sailing trust for underprivileged children.
Do you know when, roughly, when he started?
Oh, well, I... Where were we? I don't know. It was probably in the late 1980s, I think. Right. If we're talking about me working for, you know, 30 years with them, yes. Mm. But anyway, I was working, not directly for him at that time, but I helped to rig out his first buy, which was this Baltic Trader, Queen Galadriel, and we rigged it out as a sailing vessel. And that was his first, and so got that going.
Was he a sailor himself?
Yeah, he messed about. Yes, he liked it. But him and his wife lived in living at Mayland at the time. And he organised the whole thing and then added to it with other vessels. Bought the sailing barge Xylonite and had a yacht built. And we were involved in all of them, you know. And then there was one called the Hartlepool Renaissance, which is a big one that we converted for them. And then the Duet, which was an Edwardian yacht. So I had a collection, and so he bowed out about 10 years ago and is still run now at Bradwell by the Curtain Sailing Trust. They still run it, but he and I got on so well that, you know, that the good times are with when he was involved. But they've taken thousands and thousands of underprivileged children to see, and I know it's a cliche, but they do benefit.
And these are children from just Essex, London area?
Yeah, Essex and London area mostly. A lot of London area children that have never seen the sea. And they go aboard for a week and they bring their teachers with them. And there's grants available to the schools. This is the Curtin Trust's idea, is to get people interested. So you go out to the moneyed people on the land and say, would you like to benefit? Because it's a trust and we're helping the children. And so they do get grants.
Yeah.
We had a grant from the... we applied to the lottery commissioners to rebuild the Queen Galadriel and obtained it.
So the children get involved in,
yes,
in working the sails,
cooking,
yeah,
cleaning up, mopping the deck, pulling, yeah, and yes. Excellent. With the, you have a mate, or you usually have two crew and a skipper, two deckhands, who should be involved with the children. And then you have, then they bring, obviously, there are helpers or teachers with them.
And the barges are all kitted out with
bugs. The barges was, and the Queen, yes, it's all, you know.
And that's the sort of thing you did, kitted it out, or... For accommodation?
Oh, yes. I mean, most of it had to be rebuilt, like the Queen Galadriel, the bunks and everything had to be put in toilets, big tables, you know, cabins for the teachers, and most of them, yeah, fairly crude, but, you know, basic.
Again, a huge amount of work.
Yeah, so, sure, and they do. I mean, I've seen them come off and really change people, you know.
Brilliant.
But so that continues, so that's good. And they were the first to do it in here, you know, that time. Because there's a lot of criticism, there has been, you know, of these people getting a nice sale, you know. But sometimes they've taken out ex-prisoners, people, you know, trying to help out, and they've had criticism over that. But mostly children of underprivileged background. Yeah.
David, can we go back to your early days on the barge memory? That's where you first started, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, with John Kemp and Jane Benham, who was Harvey Benham, who was Benham Newspapers, daughter of Harvey Benham's. And we spent a long time learning our trade on there and messing about with charterers. And then John Kemp decided that he would like another barge with an engine, because the memory had no engine, but it was sailed beautifully. On there I met Jimmy Lawrence and a few other barge skippers that had sailing barges under trade with no engines.
So when you started on the memory, you had no experience at all?
No, no, not at all. I don't think I've ever been in a boat before. So I quickly learnt. And then when John wanted, he bought the Thalatta, which is still going, we got chucked off, I suppose. And we all joined. Jimmy Lawrence, the barge skipper, then had was joined the charter trade with a barge called the Lord Roberts, and we all jumped aboard there and said, hello, you know, we're your new crew. So I spent time with him, and then from the Lord Roberts, we went on to another charter barge, or made it into a charter barge called the Marjorie. So over a number of years, I'd spent a good time with Jim, who was absolutely superb for teaching how to sail a barge.
So when you say it's a charter barge, were you trading, or were you taking people?
Oh, only, no, all trade had finished. Cargoes had finished, just the trade were people, yes. You'd weekends and five-day week, during the week you would... encourage all different people from colleges, from school, you know, mostly grown-ups at this time, not necessarily children. But because Jim was the attraction, being very, very good with charterers and a superb sailor, the business grew and we had people back every year. I didn't go all the time, but, you know, between jobs and whatever I was doing, weekends I'd help out. And I'd been with other people, John Fairbrother, who was a contemporary. He had the Kitty, he rebuilt that, and so with him. The last motor barge trade I was with was with Bob Wells on a motor barge called the Trilby, and we did a few freights with him. So Tommy Baker, who was the senior person that we all loved, he was helping out on the charter barges. So my good memories are with them, and being the people we thought were our heroes, because they knew their stuff and were very quiet about it, and and just taught us how to do things properly.
Great people to learn from.
Oh, absolutely, excellent, yes.
Experts yeah. in
yes,
their own
right.
field.
Yes, that's right, yes. And still see Jim from, I suppose, being known him for 40-odd years, and we go to Bryantesea and still see excellent. Him.
Yeah. So. And so nowadays, coming up to date, I think you've been writing a book.
Well, over 20-odd years, because if you're banging and crashing, it's nothing nice than doing a bit different weekends or sitting at a computer or writing and researching, going to the Essex Records Office, blah, blah, and the Customs Office. So I've been researching John Howard, who was the barge builder at where Dan Webb and Fees are now, called the Shipways.
Can you tell me his dates?
It's 1840-something to just before the Great War.
Right.
He was about 60, yes, about that age. I should know.
Yeah, and so he was a barge builder himself.
Yes, and he did yacht smacks and other things, right. But he was quite prolific at the yard and very well respected. Mm. And the newspaper library now is, you can get it online, the National British newspaper. Well, it's been brilliant too, because he must have had some cousins or the proprietors of the newspapers loved going down there. Anything he did was reported. And so that was made of my research. And all the historical, I've included 5 chapters on the history of shipbuilding in Maldon from the 12th century. So my wife said, who has reread it for us, had said that it's getting a little bit more interesting after the 5th chapter. So it'll be a bit boring, but then I've got John Howard's life. And
have you finished the book?
Yeah, it's with my friend Jamie and Catherine Dodds, who are the artists at Wivenhoe. They run a press, and we've just sent the whole book to an indexer who lives in down the south coast, Shoreham, I think. Because you have to pay for the indexing because it's a pain in the arse. We're waiting for that to come back. She's done the book. A week ago we went round and discussed the cover. Barry Pierce has done a beautiful painting of the record Rain, which was one of John Howard's, that going on the front cover. And then it's got another pen and ink drawing of a barge on the back cover.
Brilliant.
So, that's all done. And it's just been proofread for the 100th time by a friend of mine who knows nautical subjects in Kent. So she's got it on her computer as we speak, is going through the 20-odd chapters.
So you're hoping shortly for
I've applied to the Harvey Benham Trust and the Essex Heritage Trust for some help, give me money. Whether that will be successful, I don't know. So I've made a pitch for both of them to help, because finance is going to be a problem, because we want it hardback. Mm. It's 300 and something pages, lots and lots of photographs. Mm. So we've got to wait. They've got a friend that is an intermediary between people that are publishing the book and people who want to print it, and go to the printers for the best deal. So we're waiting to hear. We know roughly we've got to probably find 20,000.
So hopefully later this year.
Oh yes, it's got to be.
What's the book called?
It's called One of Howard's, inverted commas, because that's what the bargemen used to say, oh, that's one of Howard's, in pride, because they were very, very nice barges.
Yeah.
The life and times of John Howard, dates and a history of shipbuilding in Maldon.
Well, I think we must look out for that then later this year.
Oh, you should get a little slip through your door to insist to come to buy it.
You get lots of local publicity for it. I'm sure you will.
Well, it's the toss-up now is how many to get printed, money-wise, and also because I'm 73 this year. I don't want to be in my 80s and still have 500 books in the loft, So it's the delicacy of, people say, oh, go for 1,000 because it's much cheaper. So we're talking perhaps 500 to 700.
Well, I hope it goes well.
Thank you,
David. And thank you very much for telling us a lot about your life. It's been really fascinating.
You're welcome.